Well, she sued. She won.
She's back.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio. You can listen live every Monday at 6:30-ish Eastern Standard Time, PM Eastern Standard Time, by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we're back with another installment of Tales from the Tale, a collaboration with Dr. Evan Goldstein of Bespoke Surgical. He's going to join us during the second half of the show. Super excited about that. And as always, I am your host. My name is Tom, and I'm here with my amazing co-host, starting with the first one. She's back.
Sorry, not sorry, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
There's none other than us three that can do that just like right on point like that.
So, we do got it down.
Yeah, we have it down.
She was so close last week.
Yeah, Elsie had a little trouble.
Okay, that's enough about Elsie. Moving on.
Oh, she's nasty.
Someone's a little butthurt from listening.
Well, anyway,
back.
Well, welcome back, Trish. We missed you last week. We did, even though we burned you, but we still missed you.
I don't know why you guys feel the need to tear me down.
Well,
it's a lot of fun. And like I said, we missed our chance on the Roast of Trish episode.
So and we're
we
making
have to make up
for it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I do so much for this podcast
and you
guys just tear me down.
I know, but you know, you do so much and I'm super grateful. Chris, I'm sure, is super grateful. And not only do you do so much for the show, but you have so much going on and so much that will be going on in the future. So we have some good stuff that we can look forward to in the near future from you.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited about that.
Trish is going to do her own podcast.
She is. And I think that we need to...
That doesn't mean I'm leaving the show, everybody.
No, she's here. She's here to stay. She's not going anywhere. Are you kidding me? I have Velcro on that damn chair.
Mm.
She has to struggle just to get out of it.
That's just the weight.
Yeah, pretty much. So so we've got so many things to cover. Dr. Evan Goldstein will be with us. We've got stories. And we also have a lot of, situations that have been occurring over the past few weeks. I'd like to kick off today's episode with a story that's a little on the serious side, but a very important one. But before we do that, because we need to savor our taste buds and get our mouths nice and juicy, I'm going to let Christopher talk about our cocktail for today.
Okay.
So what are we drinking, Christopher?
Well, today, about 2 minutes before we started, Nick just threw some vodka, club soda, and a splash of Red Bull in a glass because I couldn't make up a cocktail. So that's what we're having today.
It was a very, very, very
that's
busy
a horrible
day.
Cocktail.
I know.
It's delicious.
I know.
Trish made it.
I know. I should not have let you take the reins.
Again, another thing I did for the show.
We're still waiting for, the elaborate cocktails, but we'll get there eventually.
Well, she started another class.
I didn't find out until literally last night we got the okay that your class is starting today. Like she said, we're gonna hold it off to the very last minute, and she sure did. So I got an email at like 6 p.m like, you have your class starting tomorrow 9 a.m
So how long is this class gonna be?
It's 9 to 12 Monday through Friday for 3 weeks.
Well, that's not bad. So 3 weeks from now we can expect elaborate cocktails again.
The Monday following the end of class will be a nice celebration,
provided that Bobby doesn't suck the life out of you.
Provided.
Wow.
Yes,
he's actually agreeing.
I will give my word the Monday following the last day of this class, especially if I pass the test to get me into the next math course. I'll
my
make
neighbor
a nice one.
Gave me some mint, so let's do something with mint. I have a whole bunch of it upstairs.
Mint is great for summertime drinks.
Yeah, so
well, once it decides to be summer out, it's going to be 40 degrees tonight.
I actually enjoyed this weather today, this afternoon, but it was good. Anyway, so as
but
I
yes,
said,
the cocktail's delicious and nutritious.
Of course. it's got the salad in it. But so I want to talk about a couple of things that are happening over the past few weeks. We have seen a lot of celebrities, a lot of people who have committed suicide. And it's a very, very important topic here on the show because of the story that we have told many times on the show, and we talked about...
Well, not even the youth, but youth suicide rate in the LGBT community, but the entire community, and of course, yeah, my ex.
And so, during this past day, we had a personal friend of ours, Hans, who's been on the show before, had a friend who we had an opportunity of meeting when we went to New York, who posted on social media, on all of his social media, a letter or some sort of note that indicated that he wanted to harm himself and take his life. And so people started going crazy. No one knew how to get a hold of him. His phone was shut off. His Instagram accounts and other accounts were not reachable. And, you know, it led to Hans calling from Sweden, calling the police and the New York City police and having them do a visit at the home, a wellness visit, along with other friends here from the city as well, calling and making sure that this individual was safe. And we had not heard anything for about 24 hours. And Hans reached out to me this morning and said, you know, if you could, please talk about it on the show, because I'm very concerned for my friend. And I need to make sure that as many people as possible know that if you're in the New York City area, we were going to post pictures and everything. But then luckily, he posted something on Facebook, reached out. He is safe. He's still very fragile and needs help. But the important part is that he is safe. So there wasn't, Hans said, don't worry about it. Don't post it. We're going to take care of it. And we're going to make sure that, you know, he has a support system that he needs to understand that he is loved and that in this life, right, when people are alive, you have no idea how much you mean to someone until you're gone. And so the overwhelming amount of posts that posted on this young man's page was so incredible and so far-reaching that I think that he'll have a very significant time going through and really internalizing a lot of what people feel for this individual, and I'm very happy at the outcome. But that's usually not the case for a lot of people, and as we know, there's a lot of things that happen. A lot of people commit suicide and really don't have that support system that this young individual may have had in place. And again, I'm very ecstatic about the outcome, and I'm glad to know that he is safe. But that being said, I wanted to talk about it anyway, even though I told Hans, you know, I'm grateful he was found and he's safe and there's no need for us to post anything. But I wanted to talk about it on the show because of what recently happened, right? You've seen a lot of celebrities committing suicide, a lot of people who suffer from depression, which is a very, very real thing. It's harsh, you know, and when we think about some of our even inner circle or network of podcasters, Andy Julia from the Idiots Radio had his girlfriend committed suicide a little over, I believe, a year and a half ago. And that was very tough on him, and it's very tough on the people that it happens to. So I wanted to let everyone know in whatever voice I can, in whatever voice we have here on the show, that you are loved, that you have people in your life that love you and that you matter, and that you should reach out to those that love you and to your support system and talk, you know, because I think that's important. And to those listening, if you don't have a support system, there are agencies, there are groups, there are people out there that will listen to you and talk to you and figure out whether or not they can assist you in any way, shape, or form. And so I wanted to put that information out there. And the first is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And that phone number is 1-800-273-8255. And then, of course, near and dear to my heart, because it really supports our community, the LGBT community, and not that suicide really differentiates, but there's also the Trevor Lifeline. And that's 866-488-7386. The Trevor Hotline provides a chat service where you can chat with someone or even call. And I think that it's important to make sure that our listeners have that information.
And important to know you can call 24/7. There are always people ready to listen.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, this is going to be a heavy start to the show.
Yes, it is.
But the biggest thing, if you're ever it's not the biggest thing, because everybody's life matters, right? But you don't understand the ripple effect that suicide has until you experience it yourself. And no matter if you feel as though you're alone, or if you feel as though you have nobody in your life, that's not the case, and your life will and does matter, and it will affect a lot of people, and it will hurt a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're hurting, you probably don't think to reach out. So if a friend sees somebody else that's hurting,
absolutely,
help them reach out. I'm going to share something with you guys. Tommy wouldn't let me share it with him last night.
I didn't want to read it last night because I knew that it would be very strong for me to read, and I was in a different
headspace
yeah. yesterday.
Yeah,
but
you're probably
I
right.
think that we're in the right space for this today.
I'm going to read this because when Matt passed away, he sent me an email the night before he committed suicide. It was his letter, but I had no idea that it was his letter, and I'm going to share it with you guys so that you can hear it and know what to look for if you receive something like this. All right, so here it is. Hey, actually, it starts with, the subject is Oh Nikki, and it says, hey, I was looking at our old emails and saw a poem you sent to me. I love it. Anyways, I just want to tell you how much you mean to me. My life would be so different without you. We've been through so much, good and bad, yet we're still strong. I've never felt this way about anyone before. It's funny to look back and see the evolution of our relationship. We've had so many great memories together. First kiss, the hotel, good times at the club, and oh, those so fun drunken nights. Sleepovers were always great, and the showers. Mm-hmm, hello. The parties, the tears, drunken confusion, an occasional fight, unforgettable for the most part. The phone calls, pictures, and the many people we were able to experience this with. Whatever happens, I just want you to know that I'll always love you. I'm so proud of you for all that you're doing right now. I know that you're super busy and super stressed out, yet you still make time for me. All of the hard work will pay off in the end. Good luck with everything. You are a true gem. Keep it and read it whenever we're not together. Love you. Your boo. So, the reason I'm reading this is because I got that email and our relationship had come so far and we were in such an amazing place. So I felt when I read that email, I was just like, oh, he just really wanted to express something to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea that that's what it was. So if you ever have any doubt if you ever receive something like this or see something like that, just reach out to them. Just reach out. And make sure that they're okay. And there are so many outlets.
You know, and it's funny because when you read that, again, I wasn't in the headspace to read that yesterday. But given how we started the show, and again, it's a little heavy and I do apologize, but it has to be done. It has to be said. I start to think that, you know, when you read something like that, you read it and you think that, oh, it's a very reflectionary type of email. You know, I'm thinking about all the things that we've done. This is wonderful. But then once it happens, you see that text, that contextualized text in a whole
different way. Yep.
And so if you have a friend that reaches out to you in this way, or even just in talking, and you start seeing tell signs of them being very reflectionary, thinking about the past, you know, the great things, start questioning, are we okay? Are you in a good space?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and try to, in the best way possible, help out, because yeah. you just never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's not much more to be said, but what does need to be said, and it may sound corny, but it does get better. And it will always get better. And your life, no matter who it matters. It matters. It should matter to yourself, and it matters to a lot of people that surround you and love you. Anyway.
And with that.
So, you know, again, I'm sorry, guys, but, you know, it's there's no easy way to transition off a subject like this. We're all over the board today. So, I mean, we've got Dr. Evan Goldstein here. And so we're going to take a quick 30-second break, a message from one of our sponsors. And when we return, we'll continue with some of the dish, and then we'll have Dr. Evan Goldstein join us.
Tonight's episode is brought to you by Studio Sweden. If you're looking for an affordable headset with amazing sound quality, style, and comfort, head on over to studiosweden.com and take a look at the selection of headsets available. With an amazing variety, you are sure to find one that suits your style and needs. Use discount code GAYTALK2.0 for 15% off your entire order, and remember, it's free shipping worldwide. studiosweden.com. Now back to the show.
All right. Well, welcome back. So we're going to continue on with the show. It is 6:51 p.m. We have a guest joining us at around 7:05. Do we want to quickly jump into a story and then go to break?
I mean,
Chris, do you want to talk about your story really quick?
It's also kind of, well, you know, yeah, we can go ahead and talk about it because I think it's interesting. I believe it was... Was it the St. Paddy's Day parade in Boston last year or the year prior that they were not allowing an LGBT, any LGBT floats?
I think it was the last one they had.
To participate in the...
If I'm not mistaken.
Right, to participate in the parade. So we understand, you know, Boston's got a high Irish-American population, very Catholic. But the Red Sox, for last Thursday's game, they actually were showing their support for Pride Month. And the baseball team painted its logo rainbow for Pride Month, which left a lot of people, a lot of their straight fans upset, actually. Just showing a gesture of good faith and brother and sisterhood and, you know, showing that we're all Americans and we're all equal and we should all be celebrated. Which I thought was a beautiful thing that the Boston Red Sox decided to do that. But the uproar that people are getting is just absolutely ridiculous. Did you guys see any of this?
No. This is the first time I'm hearing of it. I will tell you, though, that the Boston Gay Men's Chorus performed the national anthem, and I'm not sure if it was at this game.
Well, it was last Thursday, and there's a picture that I'll show you guys. They have the Red Sox logo on the pitcher's mound.
That's awesome.
It's really cute.
It really is. And people took to Twitter.
As they do.
As they do.
Because, of course, you know, Cittadini.
Absolutely. I was like...
Sets the example. But go ahead.
No, I just find it ridiculous that... I don't even want to give some of these... I don't want to give these Twitter accounts any spotlight or any airtime, but I just find it appalling with some of the stuff that some of these Red Sox fans are saying, you know, like...
No,
continue. It's just pretty much people like...
I know. I know that you don't want to give that people airtime, but I think we need to because the fact that this is happening in New England is ridiculous.
I mean, granted, of course, there are Boston Red Sox fans from across the country, so it doesn't necessarily mean that these fans are from New England. Some of these fans might be Bible Belt people. So some of them, you know, you're right. I'm just going to go ahead and read it. I'm not going to give anyone's name.
Just read a couple.
Yeah. Well, one of them saying, disgusting. Nice to see my favorite team conforming to the sin of the world. No more Red Sox for my family. Another one, thought baseball was for real men. Palm in face.
Well, you know what that saying, when a light bulb goes out in Hollywood, you just unscrew it and put another one in and light the fucker up.
Didn't we?
Bye, Felicia.
Didn't we talk about a couple of weeks ago, homosexuality in sports and how it's becoming more visible. A lot of people, whether, you know, there is a spectrum of homosexuality, just like there's a spectrum of heterosexuality. There are people that, yes, may do drag or be very queeny, but there are other members of our community that aren't necessarily that way and love to go see a game or play sports and are very talented. But all that being said, they're calling for a straight pride or whatever I saw somewhere.
Yeah, that's just saying, so we get, here's another one, we get a straight pride and acceptance night, have to be equal and fair after all.
I will murder you.
Okay, well,
let's not go there.
No, I'm sorry. You've had straight pride your entire fucking life. Pride to us means something that you don't understand, so until you understand it, shut the fuck up. Educate yourself. I'm sorry.
Soapbox. Love
there
it.
There it is.
But, you know, and we've said that many times before. It's like straight people cannot celebrate pride because
you want to celebrate pride? Celebrate pride alongside the LGBT community.
Thank
as
you.
An ally.
Be an ally. That's all we can say. You know, it's ridiculous to me that, you know, they would be in an uproar. I mean, there were also some negative comments when the Boston Gay Men's Chorus went up and sang the national anthem at one of these games, and I can't remember where it was. I can remember to look it up and let you guys know, but it was such a beautiful rendition of the national anthem, and there was a lot of negativity for that as well. And the only thing I can say to these so-called fans of the Boston Red Sox is, you know, just go fucking suck a dick.
Seriously.
No, they're not invited to.
No.
I mean, it's just like the whole McDonald's thing when they put the rainbow on the back of the McDonald's thing and the McDonald's responded, well, you know, you don't have to eat our fries, but, you know, everybody's welcome to eat our fries, but we're not changing the rainbow flag.
Exactly. Like, and I think it is important with homosexuality now hitting sports on the center stage when you're looking at football players and wrestlers and soccer, it's the biggest sport in the world. Mm-hmm. And a lot of places it's, you know, still punishable by death to be gay. So it's new to be on the stage front for these kinds of sports. So it's expected to have this kind of backlash, but this isn't enough to change anything.
No.
This is not. If anything, it's going to be more empowering.
But this backlash is the type of thing that's going to set people back, and it's the type of thing that's going to scare those athletes from not coming out.
And this one pisses me off. There's another one. I thought baseball was for real men.
I said that one, yeah.
Oh, I'm just, you know what?
Well, honey, I'm more ignorance. Of a man than you'll
I
ever
have
be.
Hello.
That's their ignorance.
I'm talented. I even know how to please a man.
It's hands up to the Boston Red Sox because they obviously expected this. Mm-hmm. They had many, many, many meetings to discuss and debate this. Pros and cons list up the ass, out the ass, up the snatch, wherever you want to put it. Everywhere is okay. And they said, you know what? No. It's more important to support our fellow Americans by just who they are than to step aside and, you know, let these people turn them away.
Well, at least a part of our citizenship is actually stepping up to the plate because our White House completely, this administration just completely erased any signs of acknowledging the fact that this is Pride Month.
Except for Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State.
So it's like, fine, I'll give him that.
Tweet out there.
But it should come from someone that calls himself a president, although I don't think he is. But anyway, that's besides the point.
I'm going to, before we end this story, I want to hear if the Red Sox are going to say anything, like make an official statement. But in this article that you're talking about, it says, one socially conscious straight man puts it best. Thanks for doing this. All for inclusion. As a white straight male, the entire world is set up for me. A pride night or logo doesn't take away from anything or only lets other people know you support them. Pretty simple, people. It can be about baseball and it can be about pride.
Excellent.
Ryan O'Connor, you are a fucking man.
And you get claps. Oh, sorry, I beat you to it, Tom. I was very happy to see that one.
And on that note, we do have Evan Goldstein joining Dr. Evan Goldstein. He worked hard for that.
Yes, he did.
Coming on, sure, so we're going to take a quick
Photoshop.
Break. And when we come back, what? Photoshop.
That diploma that's always behind him.
Oh, yeah. So when we come back, the good doctor joins us for a great conversation. We'll be right back.
Everybody's got a pain inside. Imaginary wounds they fight to hide. How can I aid them? When everybody's got a pulse, I dream in a world that wants my soul. It tells me if I hate, I can control. But I don't believe it, I cannot conceive it, 'cause everybody's got a pulse. I am human, I am love, and my heart beats with my blood. Love will always win.
Everybody's got a pulse. Once again I hang my head to cry. I can't find the reason why they died. We will find the answer blowing in the wind. But everybody's got a pulse. I am human, I am love, and my heart beats with my blood. Love will always win underneath the skin. Everybody's got a pulse. Who you gonna hate now when there's no one left but you? Who are you gonna gun down? The truth that it's inside of us, it's inside our blood, it's inside of us. I am human, I am love, and my heart beats in my blood. Love will always win underneath the skin. Everybody's got a pulse.
Everybody's got a pulse.
I am human, I am love, and my heart beats in my blood. Love will always win underneath the skin. Everybody's got a pulse. Everybody's got a pulse. Everybody's got a pulse.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That was Pulse by the incredible Melissa Etheridge.
I know her.
Oh, we all do, don't we? In dedication to the 49 brothers, sisters, and allies that we lost 2 years ago tomorrow in the shooting at Club Pulse in Orlando, Florida. May they all rest in peace. Now with us, joining us back again for Tales from the Tale, a collaboration with Dr. Evan Goldstein of Bespoke Surgical, is the great doctor himself. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks again for having me.
It's always our pleasure. You know that we have an amazing time when you come on the show to talk about your stories and all the amazing work that you do on your end. So today's topic, yes, on his end.
That was a good pun.
And I may or may not have questioned the legitimacy of that diploma behind you. Just say. You're kidding. Horrible. He's real.
He's real. So welcome back. So today we're going to be talking about one of your most recent posts on Medium.com, the blog. And you're talking about PrEP. You're talking about STDs, something that we've covered on the show before. But you go into more details about a situation in one of your patients regarding his inability to, like, not stop having sex. Like, he's obsessed with it. So let's talk about it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your post?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, client is a very interesting character. I mean, I think you summarized it quite well. You know, during the day, typical worker does his thing and then just started to really understand that people weren't listening to him in terms of what he really wanted. you know, and I tried to paint a picture of who he was, 5'10", 185, you know, and a bigger build, a little bit more muscular. And he was really, all he wants to do is bottom. But yet he really couldn't find partners that would really engage with him. They always felt like he should be the top. And then he wound up finding himself in dark places, in dungeons, in alleys, in this kind of sex world, that the mystery of it, the risk of it, everything really got him off. You know, and again, it wasn't even the act of actually coming. It was more of that entire lead into, and then, you know, really being taken from that perspective and being able to kind of be his bottom, but yet still being protective. And again, I think it's an interesting situation. You know, there's a lot of things that we can talk about. One being just how we narrate our own destiny, but also that how much of that narrative is dictated by other people's perceptions of who you are, right? So that's an interesting in and of itself. But what wound up happening is that obviously, you know, he's on prep, barebacking, sometimes using protection. It depends on who's behind him. But realistically, found himself in many situations where there was trauma, where there was injury, and then also mostly sexually transmitted diseases. And again, it was a lot of, you know, his desires, but analyzing how he prepares, how is he engaging, and then how can we really mitigate some complications of having these STDs, not judging what he's doing. And we'll get into sex addiction and kind of all of that as a separate topic of discussion. But it was just kind of interesting to hear him, you know, and I said, like, not that he really cared, you know, I mean, he totally cared in terms of the STD, but it was more of, you know, the sexual act that's really getting him off. And how can we risk assess him, but lower that risk so that he can engage the way that he wants to? And we really talked about a new study that came out that looked at using antibiotics in a way of kind of prophylactic, which is very skeptical of, again, which is a lot of people find that to be, you know, concerning, creating a lot of other issues associated by doing that.
So basically, when you say this, it's they're using antibiotics in a similar way, for example, like a woman would use Plan B, like, you know, the very next day or up to 48 hours after the act of sex, or even like people are using PrEP as a preventive measure.
Correct. And so, like, this one study was kind of interesting. It was people on PrEP, and then they had about 10 partners every 2 months. So about 5 different partners each month. Wow. And what they would do is they would use doxycycline, the antibiotic, within 24 to 72 hours after your engagement.
Okay.
And what it does is that it actually reduced the incidence of chlamydia and syphilis by around 70%.
70?
Which is huge.
Which is significant.
70, which is a very significant decrease. Now, it doesn't do anything for gonorrhea because gonorrhea is a different type of antibiotic. But again, it's looking and saying, well, what do we have in our armamentarium to give clients and give your listeners so that if things are happening to you multiple times for the year, that you can now have this as going to your physicians and saying, hey, look, you know, like, what do you think about this? Or how do I continue to engage my world, but really create a sense of you know, community, that we're all trying to kind of do our part to make sure that we're minimizing as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm.
Right. So my biggest question here is, you have somebody like this story who is, I don't want to call him a sex addict. He loves sex. I mean, he's having a lot of sex. And now if he's using these antibiotics in the same way that he's having sex, like in that quantity, that cannot be good for your body though, right?
So it's basically one, you know, it's a 200 milligram dose of taking that. So it's a one-time dose.
So it's a super dose.
So it's not like, you know, right, it's a super dose of that, right. So it's not like, you know, I mean, if the guy's having 5 partners, you know, I mean, you think about it, there's, you know, one a week, that's not difficult. You know, I mean, that's a lot of people, you know, of having new, you know, one partner a week that you're bottoming. So it's not a, a tremendous amount of people where you just say, and again, I think it's more of understanding the risk. Like if you're going out and you're hooking up with someone that you know, and you guys have been on and off hooking up, and there's some element of security in that, no, then it wouldn't be. But if it's like a Saturday night that you're having like five or six cocks in your ass and you don't know who the fuck it is, you know, I mean, I think you're probably safe to say, hey, probably take a dose of the doses of doxycycline after that episode. And it's no different than kind of that party dosing of PrEP that people talk about, where, you know, you're able to use PrEP surrounding a situation that you know you're going into that's a little bit more high risk.
But over time, wouldn't taking so many doses of doxycycline eventually your body like create an immunity to it or become weakened?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the current literature does not necessarily support that thinking. But that's what a lot of people think, that like, oh, are we creating a super bug, right? Are you creating resistance or changing the dynamic of normalcy, right? And the answer is, I don't think anybody knows. But I think that as we start looking long term at this, I think those answers will come about. But I think it's, you know, you have to look at the other side, which is that it's not everybody. And if someone's going into the primary care physician's office 10 times a year for an STD, then there's got to be some element of us looking towards different ways to provide different modalities for the clients. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't necessarily, do I believe in it? Do I not? I have questions just like you, but I think that you can offer things to clients that you may not necessarily agree with, but give them the facts associated so that everybody can make an educated decision and then say, hey, you know what, why don't we give this a try and see if this this works. But everybody has the education behind it.
Before we move away from the whole antibiotic thing, what, as a doctor, would you say, how many times a year can you actually take a Z-Pak or a regimen of these antibiotics without harming your body or harming your immunity to these things and antibiotics in general?
I mean, if you look at the antibiotics, I mean, they're prescribed every single day. That so many of us are on this back and forth, you know, and I don't have the right answer. I'm an ass doctor. I'm not a primary care doctor.
So I want to read a little bit of your blog, if it's okay with you, just to.
Yeah, do it.
So in the story, the way it's written from his perspective, right? His visit with you.
Sure.
And it says, I'm on PrEP, clearly. And clearly, I love it raw. I wouldn't have it any other way. But with all the action I'm getting, you name the STD, and I have it. Recently, I had my 10th visit in 5 months to my primary care doctor's office because I was experiencing signs of infection. It wasn't a surprise that my STD results came back positive for chlamydia or syphilis. So he recommended I see Dr. Evan Goldstein, which we would recommend if you have any issues surrounding your bum area, because he's just amazing. But for a full evaluation and checkup and planning, talk to me a little bit about what that initial conversation was like. Was this the first time you've seen this patient?
Yes. So first time I saw him, and it was more of just trying to figure out, is there something else? I hate to worm the term pathology, but is there something else that's causing him to have these other recurrent bouts of STDs? Mm-hmm. Like, is there an abscess? Is there a fistula? Is there certain things from a physiological perspective that's causing this to happen? But then also, you know, obviously during that evaluation, one, making sure that the STDs has cleared, which STDs are there, talking a little bit more about his medical history, the prior surgeries, and really analyzing his life to figure out where are we in this and how can we kind of minimize, mitigate it, or completely eradicate the issues that's going on. And I think it's just from a better bottoming practice. You know, a lot of the primary care doctors and infectious disease, they just don't have the time to do a really extensive anal evaluation. And most of them don't look internally. You know, it's a minority of people that are looking internally. So you try and start to say, okay, well, is there warts inside? Are there other things that potentially can cause this, where the immune is so suppressed, the immune system is so suppressed that he keeps getting these infections? And then we talk about it, and I ask, well, what brings you into the office? And we start talking, and then I start to realize that, you know, there's obviously a lot of interesting things to discuss. And then my mind goes to Gay Talk 2.0.
So he wrote something else, and this actually made me chuckle a bit when I read it. He said, don't worry. After he had his conversation with you, he described that, you know, you like, for example, to be on a first name basis with your patients, et cetera. And you went through with all the possibilities and the options available for him. And then he ended up writing shortly after that description, don't worry, I'm still taking cock in my ass like a champ and more than loving it. Fuck, just writing makes me want some. Okay, I'm done. I'm going to go get some. I thought that made me laugh. I was sitting at work actually when I read that, and I thought it was hysterically funny, and I started laughing loud, and people were looking at me like, what's going on?
NSFW.
I think it's also important to note too, like, so he came from a primary care to you, and you, what hit me was in this blog post said that you spent almost an hour, if not more, with him in his initial visit, just to find out who he was. I mean, if I go to the doctor, it's like 15 minutes, and you're waiting for 45.
Yeah.
And I just, that is so important, that as a doctor, you're taking the time to actually have all of these conversations to really dig deep and figure out what's wrong and what's going on. Is he now kind of like are you like a primary care for his butt now?
I think it's more of just like sexual wellness type of stuff. Yeah. I mean,
she's,
I think,
fishing.
That
she needs a primary care for her butt.
Well, primarily he cares about his butt. So, yes,
well,
kind of.
You know, one thing that needs to be said, though, is congratulations to this man, because he is actively seeking medical assistance to ensure that he is at his healthiest. And he's very concerned about his health, obviously, because he's taken the time to go to his primary care. He's taken the time to take a referral and go see you to discuss.
Well,
his...
he kind of had to, right?
Well, he has to. But, you know, not many people take it upon themselves to do that actively. Right. And it leads to the spread of these diseases because people don't want to talk about it. They're ashamed of it. They're embarrassed by it. And I think that, you know, it can happen. And we need to know that we have options. For example, some of the services that you provide that could help people in navigating these type of diseases.
I just want to go back, though.
I think when you look at medicine from a while ago, it was reactive medicine. Right. And I think that is so different than what we're trying to do. We're really trying to kind of, you know, be proactive in everybody's care. And then I think that the reality is that how do I and Bespoke and you guys really spearhead having the conversation to make people aware? Like, who knew that you could take doxycycline the day after you have a high risk exposure to lower your risk of chlamydia? Like, why doesn't everybody know that?
I did not know that. I didn't know that.
Right. I know. So, I mean, I think that those things, you know, I always say, you know, fuck the physician. You don't, nowadays, you know, you have to, not literally. I know.
I mean, like, well, thinking, if I was in your office,
I wouldn't say no.
But no, I mean, I think you have to take care, you control of your own care. Mm-hmm. And I think that you have to really spearhead it, because, I mean, and it's like I owe this so much to Andy, my partner, my life partner, because he never settles for what people give him from advice. He does so much research and analyzes it and really, really digs into that. And I think that that's what's so key with what's going on. And I think what we're trying to do is at least just have the discussion. Because if we're having the discussion, now you could say, oh, well, why don't we talk about that and speak to your primary care doctor, demand this type of knowledge so that we as a community can really take care of not only you individually, but just everybody else, and just take that proactive chance, you know, choice.
It's difficult, though. I mean, if you go to your primary care, a lot of times, like, for example, my primary care won't just prescribe me antibiotics because I think this might happen. Right. Or I this weekend I'm going away to Folsom or whatever it is, and this might happen. How do you have that conversation with your primary care and say, I may need this antibiotic this weekend, and this is why?
I think you have to spearhead the discussion. You know, I think that you have to kind of talk about, you know, where you are and really take control of your own destiny. And if that primary care or that infectious disease or that physician is not willing to understand who you are, and how do we really risk assess and make sure that we're doing, you know, again, I may not fist personally, but if somebody comes in here and fists, it's like, how do we make sure they're doing things the right way? So challenge your physicians, make them think, you know, and just be like, hey, look, this is what I heard. Talk to me about it and then figure it out. I'm not saying that everything that we're saying is 100%, but I think that you should be able to have that conversation. And if you can't have that conversation, then I think you realistically need to reevaluate who you're sitting there with.
Right. And going with what Nick was saying, you know, I personally am not engaging in high risk sex, but I'm a person that's currently uninsured. So there might be people who are in my position where they don't have insurance and they can't see a primary care physician, but they are engaging in high risk sex. What can they do? If, you know, you can't get the access to a primary.
Right. I mean, I think that nowadays there's a lot of interesting online ways. So there's like STD clinics basically online that you could reach out to physicians and or they send you a kit at home where you can do at-home testing and then they'll treat you. So there's a lot of different ways, novel ways that are very inexpensive. I think it was, I just looked the other day, I think it was like $69 for like a full evaluation, and then they would then treat if there was positive results. And so, I mean, I think that, you know, and again, there's tons of clinics, there's tons of access, like going to the gay centers and Callen Lord here and, you know, LGBT center in LA. And there's so many ways that you can get care, but I think it's making sure that you're challenging everybody and that we're all educated on what's going on.
And, you know, it's very important to understand, too, that, you know, you have many local institutions or services that may be able to provide the services for free. And that, you know, you have active in our community. You have, like, for example, here in New Haven, you have the AIDS Project New Haven that actively goes out and seeks individuals to come in and learn about PrEP and take PrEP, mm-hmm. and they help you find resources to be able to cover these expenses. But we also have to keep in mind, too, that we live in a country in where you can walk into an emergency room and they cannot deny you service.
Right, but you still get the big bill.
You get a big bill, yeah. But it doesn't go against your credit. You pay $1 a month and they're not going to come after you.
So, you know, it's important to understand that stuff, but don't let not having insurance be the deterrent in seeking help or seeking assistance with a particular situation because they can't deny you service. I mean, a private institution may be able to, but not a hospital.
And a walk-in clinic can, yeah, because one in Brantford did for me. So
So I had a quick question. So you said, yeah, you said earlier something about a fistula or a fissure and abscess, potentially having, or an abscess and potentially having like a chronic STD issue. Uh-huh. I didn't know that was a thing. Is that a thing? Like it can just like what were you meaning by that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at how HIV or STDs are transmitted, they're transmitted mostly to the bottom, right? And most of the time, it's because there's micro injury. So whether we're douching, cleaning ourselves, whether we're, you know, having these fissures and cuts and tears, now there's exposed areas, right? And that exposed area and that exposed tissue now is a higher chance of getting either HIV or STDs, okay, et cetera. So that was where like PrEP in and of itself creates a barrier in your rectal tissue, in your anal tissue, that actually has the medication in that. So if there's cracks and injury, et cetera, that's why if the HIV is trying to be transmitted, that it could be blocked. And okay, so it's the same component that, you know, if someone's having repetitive issues, I want to know, all right, how are they cleaning out? Are they being super excessive, where they're doing like 5 to 7 douches and really, really being aggressive with the cleaning, right? What type of trauma are they having in terms of that? Are there cuts and tears? Do they only fist and or big, you know, big ass cocks that are like really, really causing trauma to the area? So all these certain things that would set up injury that then relate to the higher chances that they're going to potentially get those STDs. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. Yeah. I was, for some reason, I had taken it in my head like, some like there was SD being stored in some tissue in your anal cavity.
And so, I
was
like, and then again, I think that that brings up an interesting point. Also, there could be, you know, subclinical or non-clinical STDs anally and orally. And we talk about it all the time that like, if you're going to go to get seek STD testing, don't just think that doing a blood test is the complete accurate method of you know, finding out if you're positive. It's anal swabs, it's oral swabs, plus it's blood and it's urine. Okay. So all of those need to be done. So if you're not getting your ass swabbed, you should demand it, right? Because the reality is that sometimes you can have gonorrhea and chlamydia in your ass and not even know it. Mm-hmm. Really? And so that's where we're talking about, like with him, we said, you know, instead of doing the quarterly PrEP surveillance HIV STD screening, why don't we do him in the beginning just every month so that we can catch something before it became clinical, right? And then see if we can then over time break it down to every 2 months, every 3 months, and really just lower the incidence of that being an issue.
Now, can I ask a question? Something like chlamydia, syphilis, or any disease other than HIV, right? What are the possibilities of complications if you don't get this treated?
Like we said before, fistula, abscesses, fistulas. I mean, first of all, most people would get these treated because the majority of them are, it's so fucking painful. I mean, people come into my office and like they're writhing and you can just tell that the STD is a rampant issue. So most people, the STD actually wins because most people seek care at some point because it's so super painful. Obviously, you know, it could become a bloodstream infection and obviously that's what happens and it could completely go further. Syphilis, you know, there's many stages to syphilis. So you can get to the point where primary, secondary, and tertiary where you can't get rid of it. And so there's a lot of issues surrounding that. I mean, I think, again, a lot of that is just educating people on all of those and then really trying to do preventative work. But, you know, you look at it every week, it's another article that shows, you know, we're all on PrEP and nobody's using condoms and the STD rates are going up. Mm-hmm. And what's the next issue that we, you know, are going to face? And I think it's just educating everybody on all of that.
You spoke to
know that it exists.
You're speaking to that now, but I was reading in another article about the possibility of PrEP having side effects on compromising kidneys or depleting bone mineral for people who have been taking PrEP for more than 2 years.
That's why you have to get screened, though. Every 3 months when you're on Truvada?
Yeah, you get screened. And there's definitely complications with everything that we ingest. Mm-hmm. I think the reality is that it's been around for a while and it's super safe. And so I think that, again, that's why we screen, and it's a minority of people that have those issues surrounding it. But again, I think it's definitely exactly that. It's understanding the risks and benefits of everything that we're doing.
Right.
And then being exposed to these kind of conversations so that everyone could evaluate themselves in a really good way and figure out what's the best way to live life.
Yeah. You know, I was wondering, so for people that aren't as sexually active as this individual, so somebody who's having sex but not as consistently, and they want to go on Truvada just in case they find themselves in a situation, is that the type of situation where they should get a prescription and maybe take it like before and after, or should they just take the prescription as it's prescribed?
Most people, and I'll plug, we did Tail Talks, which if you go on to our YouTube channel.
I was just about to mention that.
Oh, yeah. So we talk about PrEP and we had a really great panel of doctors and media and press where we talked exactly about that. I think most physicians will prescribe a daily dose, and that's the most efficacious that's out there. So when you look at 90, 92% effective, that's the daily dose. The party dosing, you know, ranges, I think Dr. Landowitz from UCLA, he quoted around like 70, 73% efficacy with doing the party dosing, which is definitely better than nothing. And that's why a lot of people talk about using that if you're in that scenario. But again, I think that the daily dosing is what's recommended. And you should really, again, risk assess that component, which is, are you topping? Are you bottoming? Do you use protection? What situations do you find yourself in? Is it that you're going to say you're going to use protection and then it slips in and you don't care, you know? And if that's the case, then you really need to think about it.
Right. So you mentioned party dosing. Would this be the equivalent of what someone would receive if they thought they were exposed to it and they go to the emergency room, they give a super dose?
Separate situation.
Okay. Can you elaborate on that?
That's post-exposure prophylaxis. So that is a high-risk exposure. And sometimes even medical and surgeons, like if I get a needle stick from someone, you know, you have to assess that. And again, it's not the guy that has HIV that is on medication where you know they're undetectable. You know what I'm saying? It's the people that you don't know or the dungeon that you go to where you're like, oh, my God, I have no clue where we are. Right. So post-exposure prophylaxis is different. It's, you know, it's a hefty dosages of different types of medications. I had to do it once when I was stuck as a resident. It makes you sick. You just feel like total shit. Most people don't even finish the cocktail because it becomes it becomes crazy in your body. So, I mean, I think those are different. And people should know about that for sure. Mm-hmm. This is like, I know tonight I'm going out. I haven't been taking prep at all. I'm going out on the town tonight. Things are going to happen. I'm going to make things happen. What can I do? And you could take 2-2-1, which is what was described into that. So 2-2 today, 2 tomorrow of the prep, and then 1 dose after that. And again, it lowers your incidence of HIV transmission down almost by 70%.
Wow. Gotcha. So you actually got to it before I was able to. So you mentioned that you have Tail Talks, which is a YouTube version of a roundtable that you do with other individuals. When was this launched?
Yeah, we launched it. I think it was a couple weeks ago. We're trying to do it's like our first pilot of this. So we're really trying to see about getting like a TV series or someone. So if anybody's out there and wants to pick it up, you know, by all means, call us. But it's, you know, I think it's really putting a lot of people from the community together and really just talking about issues. Like this one was specific to PrEP. You know, we had Kit Williamson from EastEnders, yeah, come there. And then we had someone from Vice Magazine, Brian Moylan. And we really talked about a lot about the situation surrounding PrEP, not only the right way to do things in terms of taking it, but like the slut shaming behind it, the raw component to it. And then the next one that we're looking at is probably in a couple of months of just kind of the different issues that surround different generations of gays. So like, you know, the 20-year-old gay to me, I know where they are, but what are the issues from a gay perspective that surround their world versus the 60-year-old that just lost the partner and what issues they have. So I think it's not necessarily only going to be the asshole, you know, and not necessarily that, but a lot more of just how does it play in the community in a really good way.
So it speaks to sexuality, culture. Yeah. It envelops a lot of different aspects of
it's
our
lifestyle.
Community.
Well,
it's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
So two things. First thing, do you record that in Club Cumming?
Yeah.
That's so funny because I saw the sign in one of the videos, and that sign was actually made by my theater that I work at. And I'm like, he's at Ellen's Club, hey!
Yes. Well, we're trying to build some history into it as well. So each episode will be in a different spot, Museum of Sex or Stonewall or an Abbey or something like that. So we're really kind of moving it around to really give it, you know, that we don't forget our history, but that we're kind of creating our own history.
That's amazing. I'm excited because we'll go ahead and put that first episode, because this is going to be a quarterly video blog on YouTube that you're going to be doing. So we'll put it on the post for tonight. And then anyone that has, you know, I believe it's like 54 minutes. If you have an hour, take a listen, because there's a lot of good information on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
So I just want to move on, but I know that I feel like we're talking a lot today, but I want to move on to the summary part of the blog post. There are two things that I want to touch on. First, I want to touch on the fact that you got on a soapbox.
You did.
You said in here on a side note and then went on to talk about typecasting within our community, pigeonholing sexual preferences. And I just wanted you to tell me what made you go on that little bit of a rant. I loved it, don't get me wrong, but talk to me about it.
I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, the more and more I see, I have my own preconceived notions of what comes through the door. And it's and always I look and say, God, why do I have my own preconceived notions? Like, this is a top, this is a bottom, this is gay, this is lesbian. You know, it's like all of these certain things that we all do, even myself, where you kind of look and you're like, God, why did my mind go right there? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so I catch myself all the time where I say, if I'm catching myself and I'm noticing it, then clearly it's got to be so rampant in our community where, you know, what's walking down the street, you know, just from the way you're walking, you can tell, you know, like what you want. And I think that the fluidity, the sexuality, the identity issues, all of that is so diverse and so fluid that we really should kind of own what we are, but also understand that our preconceived notions most of the time are actually wrong.
I mean, but that's just normal, like psychologically looking at it. We do stereotype. That's just how 100%. Our brains
work. 100%.
We do, but we should be able to know that we're stereotyping something.
Since we know that our brains do that, we should be able to be like, fix that.
But we still do it.
Yeah.
So I first of all, I love that. I love soapboxes, and I loved your little soapbox in this blog. But also in the summary part, if you read the story, you really get an in-depth view of what's going on with this individual. But you talked about sex addiction, and you actually brought it up to this individual, and there were some outcomes of that. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about how you approached that, you know, what this person is doing to follow through on that.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak a little bit about sex addiction. I'm not a therapist, but I have obviously a lot of people that I can refer to. But I think that it's just having the open space and the open dialogue to talk about the issue and to approach, you know, to approach it in a really mature way to say, you know, what are those ramifications? I'm looking at it kind of in a whole perspective, right?
I see what you did.
You nailed it.
And so I have to sometimes take a step back and realize that I'm also doing a lot of psychiatry, psychotherapy, because a lot of what I deal with is here, you know, it's up above, not necessarily down below. And so when I'm talking to people, I may not know the answers. And I say that a lot of, I don't know the answer to this. And I'm not afraid to say I don't know the answer to that. But I think having the discussion then really puts us to say, okay, what's our goals moving forward? Right. Obviously, the goal for me is to make sure this guy's ass is fine and that he's STD free. But the other goal is like, I don't want him to fucking die, right? And put himself into situations where like, it's so risky that like, you know, he ruins his great professional and great life altogether. So it's just setting up a dynamic where we're able to openly have an appropriate discussion to then say, hey, look, I don't know if I'm right, but why don't we see about getting you to see someone for the sex addiction perspective? Maybe it's not a sex addiction. Maybe it's something from a childhood issue. Maybe it's this. What can you do to analyze where you're going? Now, look, if the guy says to me, I want to do this, I love this, and I'm going to see a therapist all the time, and we talk about it, but like, I want to do this in my world, I'll support that. I mean, it has nothing to do with that. It's, you know, to each his own. If this gets off, rock on. I'm fucking cool with that. Mm-hmm. But it's how do we just make sure that it's safe?
Well, and it's also really amazing, too, just to think, like, if I were to walk into my doctor's office, I know my doctor really well, it would be a simple conversation. There would be a test. I would get whatever I needed, and I would leave the office. I'd go pick up my prescription. But if you go see Dr. Evan Goldstein, you're going to have a conversation, and there are people out there that can actually do more than just prescribe you a pill. And I think that's what's amazing about what you're doing. Another reason it's amazing that you're doing this, because you're having conversations that people don't have, and these people are actually benefiting from it. Like this person, whatever's happening in his therapy sessions are happening in his therapy sessions, but he, through having a conversation with you, realized that maybe, yeah, this is the right thing for me, and he's seeing somebody to try to figure out what's going on. So there are so many elements to this situation, right?
Oh,
I agree. So, you know, and I was reading the comment section of your blog post.
Oh, God.
And so one of your readers comment, and he says, I wasn't sure if this story was meant to titillate or educate. Yeah. So is this a case of like Penthouse Forum meets WebMD?
Yeah,
I found that hysterical.
You know, it's quite interesting. I mean, I think, you know, if you go on your soapbox and you just educate, we found that most people don't click through, or most people aren't engaged on kind of the medical bullshit, you know. But if you're able to captivate and capture somebody into an interesting story, and a lot of times, yes, it is supposed to titillate, right? I mean, you know, it's like anything. Those, you know, Dr. Ruth days are sometimes can get quite horny. You know, you can get really into it. And so with that being said, I mean, I think it's, some of them are really geared towards that and some of them are not. Now, again, we also got criticized, I think, was that, is this me in terms of like, did this happen to me? And, you know, is Dr. Goldstein having syphilis all the time and he's out there having sex and doing all these things? So, again, these are client stories. Obviously, sometimes we have to, do some correcting in terms of the way that it's being written. But the reality is that these are clients that come to my office, have certain situations. We try and captivate the audience and then educate. And I think that, you know, we can have fun doing it too. And if it gets you hard while you're doing it, all right, whatever. That's cool.
I'll take it.
You know, before we close this out, I want to just say that something hit me really hard in this. It was, Forget the STDs. This was more about not getting killed, is one of the lines in the blog. And I think for our listeners and for any LGBTQ members out there, if you find yourself in situations like this, make sure you're taking care of yourself, because like that line says, it's literally life. It can be life-threatening. So you need to take care of yourself. That being said, I just wanted to open it up. Is there anything else you wanted to say about this blog or this situation before we say goodbye, which I hate doing? It's going to be a mess.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, one of the things I mentioned was being proactive, right? And some of the proactive stuff is, like we said, the antibiotics. Also, from a herpes perspective, if you are having recurrent bouts of herpes or want to diminish, you could be on a daily suppressive dose of that. So I think speak to your physicians about Valtrex. You know, I'm a huge proponent of Gardasil, the HPV vaccine. Even if you're over the age of 26, HIV positive, bottoming, I think all of us should be getting that. It's just a really great protective effect, so it will be more proactive. And then again, I think the screening component, that if you start to see where you're having more STDs, don't be afraid to speak to your physicians about getting into a little bit more of a proactive screening approach, where we're really, really taking care of our bodies and ourselves. And then again, and it also relates to your partners too. I think, you know, we have so many open relationships now that the reality is you have no idea where your partner is going. So they're walking out the door. You have no idea what situation they're putting themselves into. And whether you think that they are taking care of themselves, don't assume that. So if you are in a relationship where you are not going out, but your partner is, you can come into contact with everything we're speaking about here. Right. So the reality is that you need to be just as proactive not only for yourself, but also for everyone that's involved in that relationship. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that all of these discussion points are so important to have and educate. And I think now, finally, with you guys and all this popular press, that everybody's finally having these appropriate discussions where it just allows people to just live the life that they want.
Yep.
Which is amazing, you know, because in the end, that's all we strive for, right? To be able to do what it is that we want in a way that, that will not only help ourselves, but, you know, keep others safe as well.
Yeah. Does Gardasil, I know that we're trying to end this, but does Gardasil, if you have HPV, should you still go get the vaccine? Is there benefits there?
So there's more and more literature to support, yes, doing that. And this is a whole nother discussion, and it goes long and long and long. But okay. With that being said, there's much more evidence to suggest, like in Europe, that the age was moved to the age of 45 now. So everybody under the age of 45 should get vaccinated. And the more and more we study, especially our own kind, we start to realize that we are not like any other people. So bottoming is quite traumatic. And yes, HPV can be rampant all through our lives. So one, getting the vaccine, there are many different types in the vaccine. So you may not necessarily have all the types that are in the vaccine. So it would protect you against that. Also, there's more and more data to say that even if you have a specific type, getting the vaccine is like a super dose, like we spoke about, that creates an immune response that lowers your chance of actually having it come back, or getting anal warts or whatnot. Right. So I think that the main issue surrounding it is, one, is people and primary care physicians and what aren't aware of the newest data. And then two is the cost, because anywhere it could cost between $200 and $300 per shot. And there's three shots in the series. So it's, you know, it could be $700 to $900, which is costly. So I think that, but when you look at the benefits that are coming more and more and more in the literature, I think it just makes so much sense.
It's well worth it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, again, Dr. Evan Goldstein, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your day to come talk to us once a month. And also, of course, doing our little segment that you send over with other information that we do every month as well.
Hashtag from top to bottom.
Hello. It's amazing. You know, we've learned so much, and I'm sure that our listeners have learned so much. And I hope that, you know, the good work that you're doing is something that will spread like wildfire, because it's needed.
It already has.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I would say, I don't know, I was thinking about maybe spicing it up next time, or maybe we can do like a Tales from the Tale from one of you guys.
We could do that. Definitely.
We'll talk about it.
Lord have mercy.
Right. Anonymously, maybe. How about that?
I don't know. I mean, you're so pro this. Why? What's up?
Fine. We'll talk.
All right.
Let me know when you be in when you're in New York, and I'll come see you.
He will. Make sure that you know where your exits are. You'll be good.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. I appreciate it. Remember, Instagram, Bespoke, Surgical, YouTube, all the channels, and then send us all the questions that you have. I didn't know, how did the wipes thing go? Did I answer everything that you guys wanted?
Okay, so I think so.
I thought it was good.
But here's the thing: is like being a gay man. It's like you grow up and you come out, and it's like every gay man has wipes in their bathroom. At least that's been my experience. And I've used wipes. I've stopped using wipes. But it's like also, I wipe, but I also dry it off. I don't just leave it wet. Can I use them if I dry it off?
No.
Yeah, and I think the first time I touched a wipe from when my mom stopped wiping my ass was when I was like 25, and I did it like two times. So,
well, you got to remember that it's not only from he's not coming at you from a health perspective. He's also coming at you from a
ecological
perspective. Yeah. Like, this is so bad for our,
but also a health perspective
and a health.
I mean, from like, both. Well, it pretty much was.
Just to let you know, Trish wasn't here last week, so we had a guest host join us, Elsie. She is devastated. She's sending me pictures of her wipes package. Like, she's sitting at work. I am tempted, but I am not going to, because the good doctor said not to. I am so devastated. She is heartbroken.
Get a bidet. He said they're affordable. Yeah.
I see, but I find it so funny that comment that you made created such a conversation.
It's amazing, though. But, you know, these are things that people don't know. And, you know, if you're not aware of something that could possibly harm you, harm the ecosystem, it's always good to have that information. And then you take that information and make an informed decision as to whether or not you want to continue to do that. Obviously, you've already been there.
So, okay, you're right. So, but for our listeners, if you were an avid wipe user, what is the other option? Is it a bidet, or bidets bad, or like?
Yeah, I mean, I think bidets are really great. They're much more affordable now. There's many companies that just put it to the existing toilet seats that's there. Mm-hmm. There's one that we work closely with called Tushy. And the reality is that, you know, take a shower, take a bath, clean yourself that way, soap and water, use the bidet, like we said. And again, it's really drying. There's natural flora that is there, and that's supposed to be there. When you start kind of using other things, you're augmenting that. And when you augment that, you can get growth of other bacteria, fungal issues, and especially summertime, you're sweating already all day. So now you're adding all of that to that.
AKA swamp ass.
I was going to say swamp ass.
You know what's interesting? I'm thinking in a different way. What about gay parents that have babies? Should they be using these baby wipes on their babies, or they should?
So I'm a gay parent, and we use the baby wipes, but I'll tell you, most babies' butts are really resilient to everything, right? And so they're using that. But what you wind up seeing is that at some point, I don't know when I think it was for Phoenix or Sebastian, like when they were like 4.5 to 5 years old, all of a sudden they started to get rashes and reactions around their face. Because if you're like, oh, they have shit on their face, and you wipe their face off, and they start getting reactions. So I think there's something along the lines of the skin that's starting to change, where it starts to be, you know, become more of a chronic issue.
Right.
And so I'm sorry that we were supposed to end the segment, and then I brought wipes back. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
But that's what she gets for not listening to last week's episode.
I listened to the whole thing.
Then you would have heard the fact that he said that, you know, he stopped using baby wipes.
No, I heard it, but I had questions. What if you dry your hole after you use a wipe? Is that
so? I think, and again, for the listeners, periodically using it, okay, great. You know, it's more the chronic stuff. You know, so I mean, the periodic use, you know, you got a really bad accident, you're on the go, and you need to. All right, do it. But I find that most people, even with that, develop some element of reactions where you get like the itchy butt syndrome, and it just creates havoc.
Well, what about like one of those battery powered like fans?
Is he doing
you
this
know,
right
after?
Now?
Yeah. I mean, just like lift the balls. Like,
now they have those like portable. Now they have those portable bidets, or you could take like a little water bottle and like squirt your asshole. You know?
Oh, there you go. There you go. That sounds affordable. Dollar General, Dollar Tree, Dollar Store. You know, they're everywhere.
For our listeners, Chris has his legs in the air at this moment.
I took pictures. I'll post them.
I just saw your hole. It's unbelievable, actually.
Why, thank you.
It's like Chewbacca on steroids, but anyway. Well, okay. Anyway, Dr. Evan Goldstein, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode. It's always amazing. We're looking forward to the next one, and we will definitely hear from you next month.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so that was the great Dr. Evan Goldstein from Bespoke Surgical. The man's amazing. What can I say? He's so great. You know, he's so personable. He's really got... I think he is doing the right thing. He's doing exactly what he needed to be doing.
I agree, 100%. He's an amazing man, and he's fun.
So...
And funny, but I don't think we need to talk any more than we already have talked about...
He's very handsome, too, and I always say that. It's like, Lord have mercy. If I go to your office, you better know where your exits are. That's all.
So
I
you were
say.
Saying that because of you, not me.
And you. I definitely...
He's a beautiful man, but I don't necessarily like blue-eyed men.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You put a bag over his head, he'll be good.
Right? Oh, my God.
No. Anyway, so we still got a couple of things that we want to cover. I know we went a little long with the segment, but I
totally
don't
worth
mind.
It.
Totally worth it, because that's amazing information that we need. And our community, especially the men, you know, who are experiencing sexual activities that may put them at risk. So, all right. So we mentioned before, right before we came back from the break, tomorrow is going to be the 2-year anniversary of the shooting at Club Pulse that killed 49 brothers and sisters and, of course, allies that were in that nightclub. And I just wanted to say that, you know, there is not a day goes by that I don't think about that incident, and I don't think about what happened in that club. And as a bartender, and I know, Nick, you're a bartender, and Chris is also a bartender, and we sit behind that bar, and every time that door opens, I find myself gawking from top to bottom, like literally scanning people to make sure that not only I'm safe, but that the people that are participating or in our bar are safe as well. And, you know, it's really insanely like crazy how aware, hyper aware I have become after this situation. But you know, I just want people to know that they will never be forgotten.
Yeah, no, I think all the time when I'm bartending, I just like, what would I do if somebody walked in that door right now? How would I react? And I mean, there's no right answer, honestly.
There isn't.
Luckily we have a really great owner that really, really does protect us.
Oh, he stands at that door. I mean, and you know, God forbid, but it's not that hard to take someone out a door and go into the bar and do what you need to do. But he is very vigilant. Mm-hmm. Actually, he's very hyper vigilant.
Yes, he is.
And he turns people away. No, you can't come in. Good night. We're done. We're full. We're full capacity. Go away.
He does.
And that's amazing. And I feel that brings me some sort of comfort in that situation.
Yeah. But anyway. You know what we haven't covered yet?
What have we not covered?
The fact that the Tony Awards were last night.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the Tony Awards and another, you know, amazing performance of students that just recently went through what people at Club Pulse went through.
Were they at the Tonys?
They performed.
Oh. Well, that's Seasons not what I love. Wanted to talk. Wow. That's amazing.
And it was absolutely stunningly beautiful. They got a standing ovation. People were just like mesmerized by this group of amazingly talented theater company from the school of Stoneman. Help me out here. Oh God, I can never remember
Marjorie
the school.
Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
That's amazing.
So,
but you know, I wanted to. So the Tony Awards, there was an amazing moment.
Uh-huh.
Besides that moment, where Andrew Garfield, who was playing Prior Walter in Angels in America. Mm-hmm. He won a Tony. And can I just say, first of all, as a gay man, if you have not seen Angels in America, there is a movie.
There was a series.
It's an HBO series. Mm-hmm. It is literally so powerful and so beautiful and means so much to our community. Everybody within our community should watch it. It mm-hmm. is about the AIDS crisis.
Yep.
And it's also about acceptance and finding love. It's about so many things and battling religion with homosexuality. There's so many elements within this story. It's beautiful. But he said, so he gave a speech. He dedicated his Tony to the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said at the end of his whole thing, he ended it with, let's just bake a cake for anyone who wants a cake baked. And that's how he ended his speech. And the beautiful thing about it is Angels in America it's a gay play. And it's about everything that we've struggled with. And he dedicated that prestigious award to the entire community of people that have stood up and fought for what we need and the right to live and who have struggled and fallen. And that's just so powerful and beautiful. I mean, you get to a certain point in his speech and you see him rambling on. He's like, oh shit, I have to actually thank some other people. And then he's like, but his focus was our community.
And that's
what I keep looking for. It's like allies that'll stand up and preach visibility and strength within our community. And it was such a beautiful moment. And again, everybody should watch Angels in America.
You should. It's a series on HBO. It's available. And also, you know, another movie that I mentioned before, and you guys have not watched it, but one of these days we're going to sit down and watch it. And the Band Played On, which is a very, very descriptive movie about the very early stages of when they started, cases started appearing and people didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
It was very, 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 very good. But before we move on, going back to the Tonys, Robert De Niro, you're my fucking hero.
Oh, please.
Fuck Trump.
Oh, please.
Oh, he's my hero.
Why? Why?
Because.
What did that accomplish?
Hello. He said to the man that I despise, fuck Trump. I say it all the time. He's still my hero. And he used it in a public forum. And they beeped him out, but we got the video anyway. And I saw it. And it just gave me, I just felt so good.
I mean, I feel the same way, but it just accomplished nothing.
Well, I mean, that's your opinion.
No, you're preaching to the choir. He didn't change a single person's mind.
No, well, he doesn't have to. But he spoke up, and he used a very public venue to do it.
Absolutely.
And that was awesome. Don't diminish my shit. I will cut you.
I did. Mm. Begin cutting.
Get me a knife, Trish. All right, anyway, so you've got stories. Chris, you have a story that you have here in the notes. Why don't you talk about that story?
Surely.
As he's scrolling.
No, I got it here. No, it's actually really, with this being Pride Month, amid a threat of massacre, St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands, they held their very first LGBT Pride Parade this Saturday with zero incident, which was excellent. There had been a threat of massacre, if you will, quote unquote, on Facebook, where someone calling gunmen to fire upon people, marchers partaking in the parade. But the Virgin Island Police and the FBI field office in San Juan, Puerto Rico, were investigating the matter, and they said that the threat was one of the most disgusting ones ever made. But the parade went on. There were, you know, a couple anti-LGBT protesters there, which is normal. But the participants and supporters turned out in far, far greater numbers. And regardless of what had happened, you know, everything was done peacefully. And something that was really important, the Virgin Islands Police Chief Winsbutt McFarland told the Virgin Islands Consortium, a local publication, that, quote, at the end of the day, these individuals, and this is regardless of how anyone feels, and he said, quote, at the end of the day, these individuals pay taxes, work in our community, and are members of our community. And because of that, my obligation is to the safety of this community, and that's what we did today.
How do you say community?
Community. It was slightly cursive.
That kind of pisses me off.
Yeah. Because it's saying, it's like, you know,
because they're paying taxes and they work here, we're going to protect them. You should want to protect them just because they're humans.
No, because they're people. They are our community, is what he said. He's saying, that's him coming. I think that's absolutely perfect. Even if he thinks.
Can you reread that opening part?
At the end of the day, these individuals pay taxes, work in our community, and
work
are
in
members,
our community.
And are members of our community. And because of that, my obligation is to the safety of this community. And that's what we did today. Regardless of how. Yes,
no,
regardless.
That's a bad statement.
No, it's
not.
It's
a bad statement.
No, it's not. It's showing police support for the community.
That's great.
It's saying, regardless of how this person feels, he could feel that note that you had in there about that guy, how gays should be stoned to death. Regardless if that's how he feels as a person, he, as the police commissioner, the head of the police, is saying, I don't care what I think. I will put that all aside, and I will be damned sure to make sure that these people are safe to do what they're doing.
The point is, he shouldn't be saying anything about taxes or anything about our community and this community or whatever. He should be saying we should be protecting these people because they're people. It has nothing to do with the fact that they're good citizens in the community or not good citizens in the community. If they pay their taxes, or they don't pay their taxes.
I understand your fixation on the tax thing, but he's saying that these are members of our community, and at the end of the day, we will always protect our community regardless of anything.
And I'm not saying that this is bad. I think it's great. What he said was great. All I'm saying is, I think the way he approached his statement was incorrect. Hmm. And people should rethink how they approach things, because just because I'm an individual living in New Haven and I work in New Haven, I pay taxes in New Haven.
You're a law-abiding citizen.
Right. So I do deserve those things, but I'm also, just because I'm a person in New Haven, whether any situation is a situation, I deserve the same respect that any other person would get if they're heterosexual versus homosexual.
Ooh, difficulties among the ranks of the show.
I mean,
love this
is what we do.
Of course. I just love it. I had to sit back and just watch it all happen. I was like,
That wasn't even that bad.
No, it wasn't. It was very civil.
So,
because you both pay taxes.
Well, law-abiding citizens. Mm. Speaking of civil, 50 minutes till the two fatties meet. I'm looking forward to that.
I was gonna play the end of Andrew's speech, if that's okay, because I don't think I gave it justice. Can I do that?
The what?
The Tony speech. I don't feel like I gave it justice when I spoke it, so I wanted to play it and see if that's okay with you guys.
Do it.
All right, hold on one second.
With you. To Kate Bryden and Greta Seacat, I share this with you. We are all sacred and we all belong. So let's just bake a cake for everyone who wants a cake to be baked.
That's amazing.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. I don't feel like I gave it justice.
And we talked about that last week. So actually now I'd be interested in your perspective on with what happened with the Supreme Court with last week. You know, they didn't have a real a final say.
Well,
they didn't have a ruling.
The ruling basically just said that the state Supreme Court, did not objectively give the bakers an opportunity to have a trial there, an unbiased trial. Basically, they were saying that the arbitrators and the people that dealt with that lawsuit were biased against the bakers to begin with, so therefore it wasn't fair. So the ruling from the Supreme Court doesn't say it's unconstitutional.
Right. It just on simply said, end.
We're sending it back because you guys need to deal with this.
Yeah, which I want to hear your perspective on that because we talked about it last week.
Okay. I just think that if you're going to discriminate against somebody based on your religious belief, then you need to discriminate against everybody based on your religious belief. Okay? So if you're going to discriminate against a homosexual and not bake them a cake because they're gay, what about that man that's getting married down the street that just cheated on his fiance with his neighbor?
Or
because
person.
That's against the
law. Oklahoma or Kansas, when they put that adoption, when that adoption bill was passed, it was not only that these religious institutions that are fostering children can mm-hmm. deny same-sex couples, but they'll also deny divorced couples,
right.
remarrying yep. couples.
There
so they're following now, that disgusting principle.
Now, here's the thing, right? So you deny all of these people based on your
right.
religion.
Oh, I'm agreeing with you, by
how,
the way.
No, I know. I'm just getting hyped up. How long do you think that fucking bakery is going to be there? Because you're going to be able to serve probably 25% of the fucking population that comes into your restaurant.
Not long.
I'm sorry, long. But you can't discriminate against one part based on your religion if you're not going to discriminate against the whole.
You can't pick and choose which wrongs are more wrong than the other wrongs.
No, because if you pick and choose something like that, you know what that is? That's hate.
Yeah. So in other words, when someone walks in and says, I would like for you to bake a cake for my second wedding, sorry. I don't believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
You should go back to your first wife. I'll make you a cake for you, too.
And Waffle House Kim should follow her own examples as well.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
She shouldn't be able to sign her own fucking marriage certificate.
She's
sorry,
what,
Mom.
Like three marriage licenses in?
Yeah.
For her? Fuck her.
That
sorry,
all that
Mom.
Being
fuck her.
All that
sorry,
being
Mom.
Said, I mean, we'll see what happens with everything, but I just think if you're going to rule in favor of somebody that's being bigoted and you know, hurting individuals, then you have to rule and say, okay, well, this is a situation, and you cannot serve anybody based on your religious beliefs if they come against your religious beliefs.
It's important to note that the Supreme Court did not rule in favor.
Right, that's why I'm saying we'll see what happens.
I said this during the last episode, but I think what's going to happen is that the Supreme Court doesn't want to touch it, right, with a 10-foot pole. It's going to
go back to the...
Back to the local courts, yep. to each state. It's going to wait for states to, like marriage equality, get up to at least, I would probably say, maybe 35 states on board before it makes a final ruling and say, no, you can't do that.
But it's going to lead to so much more discrimination until that happens.
But that needs to happen because that's what mobilizes people. That's what really sets people a firecracker under their ass and says, I am not going to tolerate this. And we can not only sit there and say that we're going to expect the Supreme Court to do it for us. We need to light a fire under their ass.
That's why,
to be the voice that if we say this is wrong, we need to follow through. And as a community, we need to step up and do it.
That's why the Supreme Court didn't rule on marriage equality right away,
right.
because
exactly.
they wanted the states They wanted it to percolate in the States. They wanted to see what the American people wanted. They wanted to get the American people's buy-in.
Which is why the American people needs to step up and go do what they need to do.
And that's how our nation was built. Mm-hmm.
Go protest. Go exercise your right to protest.
Call whoever. Call the Congress. Yeah. Call everybody.
Exactly.
All that being said, I just did want to touch on one thing that you did talk about last week. You talked about the EU ruling, the EU court ruling.
That's right.
And I just wanted to reiterate, because it wasn't said on last week's show, that we will be having the couple on our show.
Yes.
Adrian and Clay will be coming on in July to talk about their process through this case. So I just wanted to put that out there to our listenership. That
and isn't that amazing?
I'm so looking forward to it, because it just brings a very, very different perspective as to what countries like Romania or that are part of the European Union, you know, not all countries in the European Union agree with marriage equality for LGBT folks.
And I'll have them on my new podcast too. So hello.
I think it's going to be amazing. And we're definitely going to announce a little bit about that before, at least mention it before we close the show tonight. So, and speaking of that, we need to close the show. So anyway, why don't we had some stories we can't get to them today. Maybe we'll save them for next week. Stay tuned. But why don't we, do you have something?
I was just going to say Dr. G just kept us talking.
And I love talking to him. So anyway,
me too.
So why don't we jump into our Gay Talk term for today, Nicholas?
Okay. All right, everybody, I'm back. And this week's Gay Talk term, brought to you, of course, by
UnicornBooty.com,
is matinee.
Not really.
Matinee, sexual encounter taking place during the early afternoon, not to be confused with feature a matinee, to have the anus licked.
Yes.
Matinee.
I wonder if never mind. That's probably not as bad as the booty wipes.
Now I call it afternoon delight, but.
Right? So what if you're getting your ass eaten now and then it's a little wet down there? What are you going to do? Take a shower, wipe it up, dry it up?
Oh, if you powder it, it could be a Turkish delight.
Oh, yes. Either that or a donut, a powdered donut at Dunkin' with a little jelly inside.
Oh, my God.
With some prunes.
Right? You're horrible. Evil. Love it. All right, Christopher.
Can we do a little history fact for the day?
Let's do it.
All righty. On this day in gay history, of course, brought to you by
UnicornBooty.com.
You still got it, Trish.
Not really. Oh, she's got a Scottish accent.
On this day in gay history, June 11th, 2010, where? In Iceland. Iceland's Alting passes a gender-neutral definition of marriage. Ready for this? The best part. A 49-0 vote.
Wow.
That's 49-0.
That's like 100% compliance.
That's not like 100%. That is 100%.
That's like incredible. Everyone.
Yeah. And becomes the 9th country in the world to legalize same-sex marriage.
That's proud beautiful. Of you.
And that happened in 2011. And 2010, I can't
but
it.
Almost.
June 11th of 2010.
Numbers are hard.
Yes. Disfaculties. But, you know, it's hard to imagine that, you know, it was for us, it was what, 2015? So that was 3 years ago we got marriage equality. This happened 8 years ago. And it's just so beautiful. It's amazing to see that, you know, the world is moving in the right direction, but we need more traction, I think. So that being said, we're going to say goodbye for the evening. So if you love the show, make sure that you rate and review on your favorite podcasting service. This helps others know about the show, and it also ensures that it becomes more visible within the podcasting community. By subscribing to the show, you get the latest and greatest delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as the episode is published. You can also support us on Patreon. Patreon is a service that you, our listeners, can use to support the show with a pledge donation. Donations are collected monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more.
And next week, we welcome a Romanian artist, Tiberiu Caputan, who photographed over 200 naked men and recorded their story for his latest project called Naked. This project is a tool to fight homophobia, xenophobia, racism, body shaming, ageism, and stereotypes.
And they're amazing photos. Mm-hmm.
You need to check it out.
Yes.
Thank you to our recurring guest, Dr. Evan Goldstein of Bespoke Surgical, for joining us once again for this month's Tales from the Tale. You can check out this and many more stories on his blog at medium.com. That's medium.com/@Dr. Evan Goldstein.
And of course, on social media at Bespoke Surgical. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So,
Can we put a rubber on this one, please?
Let's go get the box at the supermarket.
Yes. All righty. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces, you can find us on social media. Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0. Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0. Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at GayTalk 2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you want to contact us, just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab at the top of the web browser, where you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast, or you can submit a question for an individual host if you'd like, and they can answer it for you on the show. You can also call us at 334-GAY-TALK, and if you need those numbers, it is 334-429-8255. Do not forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. I would like to wish everyone, once again, happy Pride. Ladies and gentlemen, that is our show. Thank you and have a good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.